Welcome, everyone. Episode 448 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and the draft is over. So we are going to go through today, talk about all the biggest and losers from draft night. We will also talk about some of the trades that went down yesterday, too, because we certainly have to talk about the Lakers making themselves over with a massive blockbuster trade. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are recording this show live on YouTube. So if you're watching on YouTube, please feel free to drop in comments, ask questions. We'll try to get to as many as we can throughout the show.
Absolutely.
With all that said, I am joined today by a very sleep-deprived nocturnal co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
I've had roughly 3 hours of sleep.
That's all?
That's all. That's all.
Why?
Because I had to get up really early to do Mark Karansoulis' podcast, Bulls HQ.
Oh, that was a mistake. That's your
own fault. He asked me in several days before, and I had to. So I am. This is going to be a busy day because after we're done, and after we've done with the live show here, you and I will be recording a second podcast that's going to come out later on. And after that, it's hitting the keyboard because I have a couple pieces that I need to do for Forbes. So,
oh boy.
Yeah, this is going to be a nice Friday with all work and no play.
I was very glad that I got my Forbes pieces done for the month, because in retrospect, I have nothing. I was not going to write about the Sixers unless they traded Ben Simmons, which they
did.
Oh,
I'm glad, because then I'm going to be writing about the Simmons.
Oh, yeah. By all means.
The Simmonses, I was about to say. This is how tired I am. The Philadelphia Simmonses.
All right. Well, let's jump right into it, Mort. I feel like every time in the last couple of years we've done this, we've had far more winners than losers from draft night, and I think that's probably going to be the case again. Last night, if you had to pick one team above all others that came out as the biggest winner of draft night, which team would that be?
Can we preface this by saying that nobody wins draft night on day one?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, like it's going to take at least a couple of years, if not 3 to 4, before we really have an idea. But just in terms of winning and in terms of a team that came out well, that's probably the best way to frame this. The Houston Rockets, surprisingly so. No, but Jalen Green, Alperen Şengün, I mean, that was Usman Garuba. That was a haul. I mean, they got, well, probably the best scorer in the draft in Jalen Green. They got the best offensive big man in the draft in Şengün. And they got their best defensive big man in the draft in Garuba. Now, would it have been beneficial if those three players had been warped into one mega superstar? Of course, but that's just not the case. And I think ultimately those three, and they even got more pieces. I think, was it Christopher? Josh Christopher?
Yeah,
or
Josh
something
Christopher
like that?
At 24. Yeah. Yep.
So it's it's just a very good start for them, I think. I mean, and you add that to the core of Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood, Jayson Tate. I mean, that looks pretty good on paper. It's a young team. I can't believe I'm saying this because it's a Tillman Fertitta operated team, but I may have to actually put them pretty high on my League Pass ranking this year.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna pick the Rockets, if only because of Şengün. They traded up to 16. OKC had that pick, and you and I were DMing back and forth last night as the draft was going down and as he was falling. And even in our, I think it was the one with Jonathan Wasserman, a Bleacher Report, our draft preview, where he hinted that Şengün might fall to 16. And you got very mad, so I enjoyed seeing your descent into more rage as he kept falling. But I'm glad Houston stopped his fall at 16.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it. They added so much young talent, and for where they are in the rebuilding process, in this is their first full offseason without James Harden, and now you're adding Jalen Green, Şengün, Garuba, Josh Christopher. You have a Kevin Porter Jr. already. You still have Christian Wood, you have John Wall, you have Eric Gordon. Not all of those pieces fit together, but they don't have to. right? I mean, like, John Wall is not going to be a long-term factor in the Rockets rebuild, but he can at least help get these young guys. You know, it's going to be good, especially for all these bigs, if they come over right away. It'll be good to have an NBA-caliber point guard. That was one of the mistakes that the Sixers made in the early process years, is they just did not prioritize that position at all, and it really hurt them. So,
are you telling me that a rookie Ish Smith wasn't great?
Little sip, Isaiah Kanan. But they've got, you know, Green and Kevin Porter Jr. seem like they could be their backcourt of the future. Those guys both have enormous upside as scorers. Right. You know, adding, we talked about on lottery night, you know, at first we thought it was going to be Mobley at two, and how does he fit with Wood? You know, that you have the same questions ultimately with Şengün, and you know, how do you divide minutes between him, Garuba, and Wood? Wood's not going to be there long enough for it to matter. By the time the Rockets are relevant, you don't need to worry about Christian Wood's fit. Now they're in a position where they can possibly trade him either this offseason, next offseason, continue recouping value, get more picks for this rebuild. So I think this was about as good of a start as you could have hoped for if you're a Rockets fan. And honestly, I'm just happy that they not only, you know, stayed put at 23 and 24, but added the pick at 16, because you're at the point where you're so devoid of young talent, you just need to take swings on as many guys as possible. And not all of them will connect. Like, the odds of all four of these guys panning out are slim to none, but there's no risk in just trying to see, you know, which guys actually do pan out. Because the alternative, yeah, you could trade up. They could have traded 23 and 24, you know, maybe up a couple spots to 17, 18, something like that. But you have to be really sure that the guy at 17 is going to hit. Because if not, you just traded two swings of the bat for one.
Right. Also, worth noting, by the way, just in terms of the respective developments, having Usman Garuba going up against Alperen Şengün in practice, like, that is going to be beneficial for both of them. Şengün, obviously not a great defender. Garuba, obviously not a great offensive player. They will teach each other stuff. Like, they will come in and match each other's intensity in different areas, which will then help them improve, respectively.
Yeah. And what did they give up? Oh, yeah, they gave up two, like, very heavily protected first-round picks to go up to 16. So, you know, OKC continues to add first-round picks at all costs, and they added another one today, taking on Derek Favors' contract from the Utah Jazz. But I really, really liked what Houston did as well. Yeah. I think if I had to pick one, it was between Houston and I think Orlando was going to be the other one that I had. Just because, look, when they, you know, they fall to five on lottery night and you're looking at the board and it's like, well, this is a, you know, there's a clear top four and they're the number five spot. Like, they got screwed, and there was some buzz around, okay, they're still pretty high on Scottie Barnes, so it wouldn't be the end of the world. But then the Raptors surprise, I mean, went off board for most people. I think there were some rumblings that they were interested in Scottie Barnes at four. Wasserman, among others, you know, it's been all over that really for the past couple days in particular. So the Raptors take Barnes at four, and all of a sudden, Jalen Suggs is just sitting there at five for them. And
I mean, you know, that was... How do you win the draft through no fault of your own?
Yeah, I mean, just not outsmarting yourself, right? Like, they easily could have been like, well, there's some reason the Raptors passed on Jalen Suggs, so we're going to go off board. We'll take Kuminga at five or something like that. But no, they got this... Like, Jalen Suggs is the guy that they've been waiting for since what, like, Oladipo, before Oladipo?
Since T-Mac, Brian.
Yeah, right? Like, this is... They have a lot of young talent already, but they didn't have who is our foundational piece. Like, right. It could have been Jonathan Isaac, it could have been Markelle Fultz, but all of these guys that they have question marks. Jalen Suggs is going to come in right away and be, no question, alpha dog of that team. He is the piece that you build around. And, you know, there are maybe some fit questions, like, how does he fit with Markelle Fultz? How does he fit with Cole Anthony? It doesn't matter. Jalen Suggs is better than those guys. So you
and
take
they're
Suggs.
Interchangeable.
Right. But, like, you know, if you end up having to move off of one of Fultz or Anthony in the future, you don't care because Jalen Suggs is the best player. You take the best player and then figure out the rest later. So I love I love the pick for Suggs at 5. And then the number 8, you know, Kuminga was off the board at that point, and Josh Giddey was the surprise at 6 going to OKC. So you get back to 8, James Bouknight, who had been widely mocked in the top 7, he's still on the board, but at that point, you know, your backcourt is with Suggs, Fultz, Anthony. You probably don't need James Bouknight there. So they end up going Franz Wagner instead. You know, a elite shooter, which is something they're going to very badly need, especially if you're keeping Markel Fultz and Jonathan Isaac for a while. I can now just see the contours of this Magic roster fitting together better than I did 24 hours ago. Yep. So I think, you know, I'm not saying the Magic are going to be competitive next year. They're going to be one of the worst teams in the league, most likely. But they have now some foundational pieces in place where it's like, okay, this young core is starting to make sense and they're starting to fit together. Like, I can see, you know, how Kuminga and Jonathan Isaac would have fit together. I don't know, just because there are so many question marks about both of them offensively. I can see Wagner and Isaac fitting together. I can see Suggs and Fultz and Suggs and Anthony fitting together. You still have Bamba and Carter in the center spots. So there's something here for the Magic to build around now.
Right, and I actually don't think they're going to be as bad next year, to be quite honest with you, because like you said, they do have interesting pieces. So Mo Bamba and Wendell Carter Jr. respectively have never really played with a proper point guard before. Mm-hmm. They just haven't. And I think, as you alluded to, with the Sixers back in the process, like, if you draft a bunch of bigs, you will need point guards to actually feed them the rock. Now Wendell Carter Jr. has a guy who can play pick and roll basketball, so the same can apply to Mo Bamba. So I wouldn't be shocked if we're looking at a team that's flirting with 500 at the end of the year. That wouldn't surprise me whatsoever.
Yeah, I could, you know, I think they'll... Do I see them challenging for a play-in spot? Probably not. But, you know, I don't think they're going to be in the basement for very long. Especially if they do suck for one more year and add one more top pick to this team. All of a sudden, you've got a very, very promising young core here. So I think Magic fans, from what I could tell, have been elated about how the draft fell for them. And I think they should be.
So we got a question, Brian. What do you think about the Bucks and Pacers trade?
Okay. So this was, let me make sure I've got the draft tracker pulled up. So let me make sure I've got the details here correct, because it was...
Yeah. We're still playing catch up. Let's just be honest here.
Okay. So it was, this is all from ESPN. So if they have the details wrong, I apologize. But Pacers got number 31, and then the Bucks got 54, 60, and... ESPN says one future second round pick. I thought it was 2, but either way, I don't know. What did you think of that deal, Mort?
Well, so 31, right? That was Isaiah Todd. Yep. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I think when you get someone of that caliber at that spot, that's your winner right there. I mean, this is, it's a near first round pick. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Of course, you're going to get guys in that area that are just better and are more likely to produce. So ultimately, I think when you have someone like him, who's such a natural shooter coming in from the G League Ignite, and someone who's got great size, has a pretty solid first step, and is really one of those long, rangy forwards, I think you got to look at that and go, that's a clear winner right there.
Yeah, I mean, especially given the talent still on the board at that spot, just because, you know, Todd went there at 31, but Jared Butler was still on the board at that point. Sharif Cooper, who we will talk about later, was still
on the board. Oh, we'll get to him. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeremiah Robinson Earl was still on the board at that point. So, you know, I think the Bucks, had they known who would have fallen to 31, probably would not have made that trade in retrospect. But, you know, maybe they're at a point where the luxury tax is creeping up on them, especially we'll see what happens with Bobby Portis, PJ Tucker this offseason. Maybe they just didn't want to add a rookie to that roster, because the guys they took at 54 and 60, I don't know if they're going to be on two ways or if they're going to be drafting stashes, but I can't imagine either one playing a big factor for this team. And, you know, if you're the defending champion, yeah, you're probably not thrusting a rookie into the rotation right away. So I think Indiana ends up getting better value here. They ended up actually trading this pick to Washington as part of the deal for number 22. So technically Washington gets praise for actually landing Isaiah Todd. But I think, you know, of the two teams involved here, Indiana probably got a little bit better value.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And by the way, we will be taking questions during the show. So I know people on the podcast will be like, oh, well, who are asking these questions? Remember, we're live on YouTube as well.
Yes. Okay, so we hit Houston and Orlando. Who were some of your other big draft winners?
I mean, you got to go, obviously, with the Pistons. I don't think we can have a talk about, you know, a team probably winning the draft without mentioning Cade Cunningham and the team picking number one. I mean, I get that it's obvious. I get that it's a cop-out. But the Detroit Pistons got Cade Cunningham. Like, he is a generational talent. He is arguably the best prospect from a perimeter prospect since Luka Doncic. He's outstanding. This is a guy who could transform the Pistons into being from being this middling tier team that occasionally makes the playoffs into a full-on Eastern Conference powerhouse. So through that lens, you have to bring them up as a tremendous winner. And it's a cop-out for sure, but it's relevant. And you can say the same about Evan Mobley and the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, we already covered, of course, Jalen Green and the Rockets. But, like, Evan Mobley for the Cleveland Cavaliers, to me, is just such a huge luxury there. Now you're not forced to go into your negotiations with Jared Allen and, like, having to force yourself to kind of give him a max, like, just have to convince yourself, oh, he's worth the max if that's what he asks for. Like, if he is trying to squeeze the lemon, you can point to Evan Mobley and say, you know what, Jared? We have your replacement right here. We're not scared of letting you walk now. And I think he's a guy who could just turn around that entire franchise, because they have had guards and they have had wings and all that. Now they have a big, Brian, someone you can throw the ball to, who can create, who can shoot, who can finish around the basket, who can play defense, who can rebound. Like, he's such a high utility player that we have to talk about the teams at the very top. I mean, we can sit here and split hairs and talk about, oh, did this team who picked 46 win the draft because they got... Nobody cares. Like, the big names, those are the winners there. And Mobley and Cunningham, for sure. I mean, we have seen a tremendous infusion of talent in the Eastern Conference from last night, the Central Division in particular. So super exciting moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, I think you called Cade "Don't Overthink It" coming into the
draft.
Correct,
that's my nickname for him. Yeah,
right. And to the Pistons' credit, I mean, there were so many rumors about, oh, the Pistons are really high on Jalen Green because he had a great workout with them, or oh, they're considering trading down because they're high on Green and Mobley as well. And then ultimately, they're like, no, we have the number one pick. We're going to take the best player in this draft. So we're fine. We are just happy to add Cade Cunningham to this program.
Right.
Yeah, we hit the Rockets already. But as you said, with Mobley at three, again, don't overthink it. Like, Mobley was the best player left on the board. He's a great positional fit given, you know, even if Sexton isn't long for the Cavs, Garland and Mobley together for the next 5+ years, that gives you an incredible foundation to build around. So, yeah, I think the top three teams all nailed it. Zero questions there. I think we have to hit on...
I just said top three because I'm not sold on Scotty Barnes at four.
Yeah, I think we'll probably hit Toronto a little bit later. Yeah. I don't think they belong in the winner section necessarily. Charlotte, however, does.
That's a good one, yeah.
They, much like Orlando, they're the beneficiaries of other teams passing up guys who were, you know, highly rated on most mock drafts, most big boards. James Booknight seemed like a lock for the top 10. You know, he was widely mocked to OKC at 6 in particular, and they go off the board with Josh Giddey there. So Booknight then starts slipping a little bit, gets past Orlando at 8, and all of a sudden you realize, like, oh, well, Orlando's pretty set in the backcourt. The Kings are pretty set in the backcourt at 9 with Halliburton and De'Aaron Fox and, for now, Buddy Hield. So it was like, okay, if he doesn't go to Memphis at 10, like, this, how far does this kid fall? Charlotte stops the slide at number 11. And given what they have to deal with this offseason, with Devontae Graham and Malik Monk both becoming free agents, you know, Devontae, I think they will give him a qualifying offer, make him restricted. Malik Monk, I don't know what they do with him. His qualifying offer is $7 million. He would have a $16 million cap hold, so he would eat up all of their cap space. I don't think Malik Monk is coming back to Charlotte, but now you replace him with James Booknight. And all of a sudden, you know, it gives you insurance in case Devontae leaves. It gives you insurance in case Terry Rozier, next offseason when he's a free agent, he comes and says, I want $25, $30 million. Like, now you could have a Booknight, LaMelo Ball backcourt of your future and feel pretty good about it. So that gives you some flexibility if you're Charlotte. And then, you know, trading back up for Kai Jones at 19, it sounded like he was a possibility at 11. You know, I thought Booknight was going to be off the board and they were going to be torn between Sengun and Kai Jones at 11. And then Jones fell and the Knicks did not seem to want to make a draft pick last night. So the Hornets happily obliged them by trading up. They traded a very heavily protected future first round pick. It could not, it's like top 18 protected, I believe, for the next 2 years, and then top 16, top 14. So it cannot be a lottery pick at any point. And now you get a guy who's going to pair pretty well, I think, with LaMelo Ball. He's not a unicorn. He's not a stretch five. He's not going to do much else other than set screens, rebound, block shots, and catch lobs. But when you're pairing him with LaMelo Ball, much like we saw with Trae Young and Clint Capella, that's okay. You don't need that super versatile offensive center when you've got a do-it-all playmaker. So I love the fit there. And then, you know, they make the trade with Detroit. They take on Mason Plumlee and 37, and they give up 57. They get JT Thor at 37, a guy who Wass mentioned as a riser throughout the pre-draft process. And I just like the value of that trade, too. Mason Plumlee is nothing special. He's not going to be their center of the future. In theory, that's, you know, hopefully going to be Jones. But at the same time, you know, they probably looked at the free agent market. They were going to have around $20 million in cap space, or they could have. And they probably said, you know, look, we don't know that we're going to be able to get Rashawn Holmes, or we don't know that we're going to be able to get Nerlens Noel. So we'll just spend, you know, $8 million in cap space, pick up Mason Plumlee, who could be a stopgap center for us, and then, you know, move up 20 spots where there turned out to be a lot of talent still on the board. So I thought this was a phenomenal night for the Hornets, and I like what they're building down there.
So you're telling me that signing Plumlee to that deal last year didn't work out for Detroit?
Much like with Utah, Derek Favors. No, it did not.
That was, like, the Favors thing is just horrendous. Like, that came out a couple hours ago. Like, you and I were a little bit skeptical last summer when they signed Favors to the deal that they did, Utah, obviously. And now they have to relinquish a first-round draft pick to get off of him contractually. Yeah. Like, these are the mistakes that I feel are so easy to avoid, Brian, just by not panic signing guys to major deals. Like, you could have found a guy who's like 80% of what Derek Favors is for a minimum. Easy.
Yeah. Well, because in theory, I mean, the familiarity was there with him and Gobert played together, but like the Favors-Gobert front court didn't work that well the first time, especially later in their tenure. So you're signing him, like, you know, it's similar to Horford and Embiid with Philly a couple years ago, where they're like, oh, well, we're signing Horford to be, you know, a power forward who can also play backup 5 minutes. And it's like, well, no, that's just, you. No, that's not going to work. You know, Favors Gobert was not going to work. Favors was going to be your 10, 15 minute backup center. But you are hurting yourself if you were playing Favors and Gobert together a lot. So, yes, it was. Yeah. You know, handing him the full non-taxpayer mid-level exception and giving him a 3-year deal, that's the biggest problem. Like, if it's a 1-year deal, who cares? Because it's off and you're not going to have to offload him. Giving him a 3-year deal when you know your tax bill is going to explode the next season and you're going to have to probably dump some salary. Yeah, it was bad asset management from the Jazz there. Although, I will say, to their credit, trading down from number 30 with Memphis, going to number 40, picking up 2 second round picks, and then having Jared Butler fall to them at 40. I know there were a lot of questions about him medically. He got red flagged at the combine. There's a heart issue, and I can only imagine that's why he fell, because talent-wise, you know, he's a mid-first round pick, possibly like potential lottery pick. But, you know, for a Jazz team that's pretty set in terms of their top rotation, at least for now, you know, that's the type of talent that's worth taking a flyer on, because if he pans out medically, he's going to be a huge steal for them.
I would agree. So we have a question, or rather a comment here from Peter, basically saying, I'm excited for your takes on the Warriors.
Yes.
And I want to get into the Warriors here because, you know, they made their selections last night. You already brought them up, Kuminga, Moses Moody. But I don't think they're long for the Warriors, right? I mean, they surely can't be. Like, unless they're trying to have their cake and eat it too by staying competitive with Steph and Clay and Draymond, and then building for the future with Wiseman and Kuminga and Moody, like, okay, but aren't you going to limit your championship window severely at this point? Like, I just don't know what type of direction they're headed in.
I was going to mention the Warriors as a winner last night, and it does seem like Warriors fans that I know are more lukewarm on the draft, because, you know, like you said, I think a lot of the hype coming in was, okay, we're going to package these picks for win now players.
Right.
Bob Myers came out after the draft and said, look, we weren't getting those types of offers. The only thing we were getting were basically teams trying to trade up. Like, we were going to have to trade back, and they weren't interested in doing that. He said Draymond Green greenlit both of those picks. He said, like, after the third or fourth pick was off the board, Draymond at Tokyo at like 5 in the morning was texting him, and he said Kuminga. And then Kuminga fell to 7. They took him. And then he said, you know, we get to the 9th or 10th pick, and Draymond again texts Moody. He's like, look, I don't think Moody's going to be on the board at 14, but okay. And then Moody slips to them, and they get, you know, the quintessential 3-and-D prospect in this draft. I actually like how it fell for them, because Kuminga is the mystery box. He's raw, and that's the exact type of prospect they said they didn't want to take, because, you know, they had the experience with Wiseman that last year, and as you said, they're in this win-now window. I think Moody helps mitigate some of that, because I think he can make more of an impact right away. He's not going to be asked to play outside of his role. He's going to just be, you know, Steph and Clay are going to be the main offensive weapons. Wiggins is still there as well. But you could see, you know, in a year or two, all of a sudden, the Warriors have a ton of positional versatility again, because you can roll out a lineup with, if Kuminga pans out, you can go Steph, Clay, Moody, Kuminga, Draymond Green, and that feels like death lineup 2.0 if these guys pan out, you know, how they're expected to. So, you know, would it have been better if they could have turned this into Pascal Siakam or something like that? For their short-term window, yeah, probably. But I don't blame them for staying put here if they weren't getting those types of offers, which it seems like is the case.
And that's really the thing for me. I think ultimately they got good value. I'm not questioning the value. It's the direction. Like, mm-hmm. You bring up that Dre was okay with this. That's cool. What about Steph? Like, is Steph, and what about when we get into the season? One thing is that everyone can be high on draft picks in the offseason. That's pretty easy. What happens when they're 40 games into the year and they might be smelling blood, but the rookies aren't ready? The young guys aren't ready to produce yet, but they do have value. Are the veterans going to look at, you know, Steve Kerr and Bob Myers and go, let's get someone else in here who can help right now? I it's the Boston thing over again, right? Where you try to have a combination of guys who can win now, and then you have this young core of guys you're building to the future with, and you're just trying to make that marriage work. And so far, it really hasn't worked for Boston to the extent that we wanted it to. Like, it didn't come at the expense of the development of Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, which is great. But also, that team hasn't been back to the Eastern Conference Finals after that pretty fluky run they had. and they don't project, at least next season, to be a championship contender, pending what happens in the summer. So, like, I don't know. I just think if you're going to dance that dance, you have to make sure that you do it perfectly. Like, you really can't have a whole lot of room for error if you're trying to both win now and build for the future. You have to be super sharp.
Yeah. Well, I think Boston lost a lot of those guys for nothing is the problem. You know?
Right.
Kyrie left for nothing. Horford left for nothing. Hayward, they get the trade exception that could turn into a big fat load of nothing if they don't re-sign Evan Fournier. So, you know, the talent drain there, I think, is what ended up short-circuiting the two-path model for Boston. I'd also say the Warriors had higher upside than Boston did just because, you know, Steph Curry is better than any player that Boston has rostered in 25 plus years, like since Larry Bird was on the team, you know, and even then probably still better. So, you know, they have a higher ceiling just because of Steph, Clay, Dre. We'll see what happens with Wiseman this year. Like, it's hard for me to write off Wiseman after 1 year, especially the year that was, you know, like with all these COVID restrictions, no off season, like no training camp was shortened, preseason was shortened. You don't get to have as many practices because you're playing games every other night. Like, I think I know a lot of people are just completely out on James Wiseman. I'm not there yet. I think a lot of people said the same about DeAndre Ayton after his first year, said like, oh, well, this guy was clearly a mistake at number one. And then, you know, 2 years later, he's playing a starring role on a team that gets to the NBA Finals. So, like, I think what makes me like these picks, or at least understand why Golden State is trying this, is because they aren't going to need a lot out of these guys right away. They don't need Kuminga to step into a 35-minute-per-game role and be a number one or number two option. It's just like, go play hard, cut, set screens, rebound, play defense. We don't really care what you do offensively. And Moody, it's going to literally just play defense and stand in the corner and shoot when you catch passes. We're not going to ask you to create off the dribble. We're not going to ask you to be a playmaker. We are more than happy with you as a 3-and-D guy. So, you know, do I think these picks put the Warriors back in the clear title frontrunner picture? No. But if you look at the landscape of the West, and this might be a conversation for another day or for, you know, once free agency settles, but like the West actually feels pretty wide open right now. There is not like...
Isn't that an argument for going all in then?
But I mean, are they like, was there any move they could have made last night that would have had them favored over Brooklyn or Milwaukee next year?
Well, I wasn't in the war room. I mean, we can only take what we've heard. And if Bob Myers is saying that they didn't get those offers, okay. We don't know. Maybe they did, and they just decided, oh, that's too rich for our blood or whatever because of a tax bill. I don't know. I'm just saying I would still have wanted to see a direction. If they're the Warriors, I have to assume they want to do right by Steph, Clay, and Dre. Mm-hmm. By basically saying, let's get you into the most advantageous position that we can possibly get you into. But that, and that's now. That's not 3 years down the line when Kuminga becomes something. I understand your point about Moody, you know, being somewhat NBA ready, but I think it's also fair to say most rookies are bad. Like they just are. He will still be a significantly better player 3 years from now than he will be this season. So I don't know. I'm not trying to say that they shouldn't go this route. I think it's smart to also build for the future. I mean, to understand, look, Steph, Clay, Dre, I mean, we don't really know what those guys, I mean, offensively, Draymond is basically turning into an absolute zero, at least from a scoring perspective. He can still facilitate, of course. Steph is 33, I want to say. And Clay has just missed two seasons. So, we don't know a whole bunch of how they're going to look moving forward. I'm optimistic, but there are definitely a whole lot of what if horror scenarios in play, in which case it's wise to have Wiseman and Kuminga and Moody and all those guys. But what if they come out and just hits on every cylinder? Let's say Klay comes back and he looks like the Klay of old. Let's say Steph is back into his MVP bag. Let's say that Draymond is riding high on whatever works for him. Let's say Andrew Wiggins is having a career year. Then what? Let's say Jordan Poole takes a leap. I mean, there are just so many of these components, right? I keep forgetting Jordan Poole when we talk about young guys. We all should talk about him more. He's really good. Yeah. So I think for me, it's just how do you gauge it? I think that's a difficult component, and I think I understand, rather, why Warriors fans are torn. I understand why some would go draft-wise, and I understand why some want to go win now, because you know what, Brian? Winning is fun. It's really fun.
Yeah, I mean, especially given the rumors leading up to the draft that they were shopping those picks for a major star splash, I can understand leaving the draft and being like, oh, they made the picks? Well, that's disappointing. Sixers fans are going through something similar with Ben Simmons. It's like there's so many Ben Simmons rumors leading up to the draft. Ben Simmons, you wake up Friday morning, he's still on the roster, and you're like, well, what the hell were the last few weeks about? But, you know, the draft is just one night. It's not
correct.
You know, there is plenty of time this offseason when free agency starts. There's plenty of time between now and the trade deadline. Yep. If that scenario unfolds and if the Warriors are hitting on all cylinders, look like the clear favorite in the West, who's to say they can't flip Kuminga or Moody or both at the deadline? Who's to say they can't flip Wiseman and Wiggins and package them all together? Maybe by that point, Damian Lillard does ask out or Bradley Beal does ask out. Like, They kept their flexibility alive here. And I think given, you know, you could argue they went best player available for both of these slots. And I think Moody, especially at 14, there should be a lot of interest in him around the league if the Warriors do decide to move off of him in a couple months. So, you know, I'll steal a word from Daryl Morey here. Like, optionality. The Warriors have a ton of optionality moving forward. And, you know, maybe they are hedging a bit, knowing that Klay is now 2 years removed from playing competitive basketball, knowing that they only have Wiggins under contract for two more seasons, that Dre can opt out in two seasons. Like, they do have to start thinking about their post, you know, mid-2010s core future.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, oh, well, maybe they're thinking about trading Steph Curry and see what they can get. You know, maybe they're going to pivot fully into a rebuild. I don't think that's the case at all. But I think they at least have given themselves different pathways to explore based on what happens with Klay in particular, if Wiseman starts looking a little better in year two, how these rookies get factored into the mix. Like, they have a lot more options than the Los Angeles Lakers, for instance.
Right. By the way, if this had been ESPN at the bottom of our screen right now, it would have said Toporek, Golden State considers trading Stephen Curry.
Yeah.
by the way, I just need to get this out of the way. Dear ESPN.
Oh, boy.
Next time you hold the NBA draft, which is next year, for the love of everything that is holy, for the respect of your audience, do not ever again put on Kendrick Perkins as a draft analyst. Please and thank you.
Was not a banner night for, has not been a banner month for ESPN.
Has not been a banner year for ESPN.
Yeah.
And there we go. Right. We actually have the roller down in the bottom with Brian support.
Nice. Perfect. Good.
There we go. That's our editors on it. That's great. All right. Sorry. Next up.
Yeah. So other winners that stood out to you.
Oh, boy. Now you have to... I don't think there were anyone that just, like, slapped me in the face as being, like, this no-nonsense winner. I think we covered most of them. I mean, there are certain situations that I like more than others. Like, I love, for example, that Atlanta got Sharif Cooper at 48. Yes. I mean, I think that's great value. But again, it's just so difficult for me to sit here and go, well, we can call this team a winner by gauging the 48th pick in the draft. And they also got Jalen Johnson. A lot of guys are really high on him. I'm a little bit more sheepish because, you know, there are some concerns about his offensive upside. There are some concerns about just how he approaches basketball, I would like to say, which, again, that is just what the word is. Like, I am fully realizing that, that young people can change. I mean, I'm not the same guy that I was at 19, so it's perfectly reasonable to expect change. But yeah, I like it for Atlanta. I think they took two guys that have upside. What I wonder is whether they're even going to get a proper shot, because that roster, as we've talked about so many times, they are in dire need of a consolidation trade. But hell, maybe the presence of a Jalen Johnson and Sharif Cooper now opens that door even more. Maybe now the Hawks front office are going, well, you know what? We have Jalen Johnson. We have Sharif Cooper. That opens the door to us having more players who can come in and absorb minutes when we make this huge trade package offer for a Bradley Beal or a Dame Lillard. Well, probably not Dame Lillard, but right. Bradley Beal.
Right. No, I think absolutely. You know, Matt Babcock of Basketball News mentioned Jalen Johnson as one of these guys with major question marks in the mid-first round. But, you know, he fits the archetype that Atlanta has been going after in recent years between DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish in particular. You know, you have just all of these interchangeable forwards now. Danilo Gallinari, Bogdan Bogdanovic, John Collins, if they re-sign him, maybe they view Jalen Johnson as insurance in case they can't re-sign John Collins in restricted free agency. And then backup point guard has just been a major question mark for them for a while now.
Yeah.
You know, Sharif Cooper, that was the story of the second round. Like, as soon as he fell out of the first, every single time another team came up on the clock, it was like, okay, well, this surely this is the team that drafts Sharif Cooper. And then it just kept not happening and kept not happening. And, at, you know, it gets to the 40s, and I'm thinking, like, okay, at this point, this clearly told teams just not to draft him so he could pick his destination, you know, and have a better opportunity either for a two-way or whatever. But then Atlanta takes him at 48. I'm like, oh my God, all these teams actually just passed up Sharif Cooper. I know there are questions about his size and his fit in the NBA, but at 48, I mean, his passing ability alone, I don't, like, Trae Young is living proof. You know, you don't have to be a 6'3" point guard to succeed in the NBA. And now you could basically, with Atlanta, you could play the same way this whole your entire game. Like, you can run the same offense because Sharif Cooper is a similar, not nearly as good as Trae Young, but like similar build, similar game. So I love this value for them. And yeah, I think
passer in the draft, honestly.
Yeah. And like, given their needs, you know, now they don't have to go overspend on a point guard in free agency. They can feel, you know, I don't know if they
like Rajon Rondo.
You're right. Yes. You know, I don't know if they envision Cooper taking over right away, but Chris Dunn, I believe, picked up his player option for next year. Yeah. So he's also there. You know, now you have Trae Young, Chris Dunn, Sharif Cooper as your point guard depth chart. I like it. Like, Atlanta, coming off of a run to the Eastern Conference Final, got richer last night. And that is a problem for the rest of the league, especially, you know, what we talked about after their run, where they're going to have all these tough financial decisions coming up soon. Adding a Jalen Johnson on a four-year rookie deal, we'll see what they sign Sharif Cooper to. I'm sure they're going to try to get him on as long of a contract as possible. If you can kind of reset the clock with those guys, that's going to give you more flexibility as Trey comes up for an extension, as John Collins gets his new deal, you know, as Kevin Herter, Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter, all these guys get paid in the next year or two. It's really important to get cheap, good, young talent, and Atlanta did so last night. So I thought, no, clear winners there. Just really just based on Sharif alone. Like, who Jalen, hopefully he pans out, but man, the Sharif at 48 was, I thought, probably the biggest steal of the draft.
Right. Absolutely.
So I know you're going to call me a homer, but I feel like Philly has to come up here as well. Jaden Springer at 28.
No, I think you're right. That's fair. I just didn't, you know why I didn't bring him up? Because I completely forgot about them. I think I'm on such a Philly break because we're so used to talking about Philly. But no, you're right. I give you the word there, but that they nailed this out of the ballpark. Daryl Morey, just my final note, is a master at hitting on the margins. An absolute master at hitting on the margins.
Yeah, and so I foolishly stayed up for his press conference last night, and as other people were tweeting out quotes at like 1 a.m. Eastern time, and Daryl was still keeping all of us waiting.
Oh, no, you were up to 1 a.m.? This is the world's smallest violin, Brian.
I know, it was really hard. But, yeah, he deflected all questions about Ben Simmons, as you would expect. He wanted to keep the focus on the draft guys. You know, and he said, look, we're trying to win the title, so we actually don't expect any of these guys to come in right away and make a huge impact. You know, Jaden Springer is, I think he was the youngest player in the draft, or one of the youngest players in the draft. He's like, you know, small sample size, he shot well. We don't think he's going to shoot 40% from three. But he's a hard worker. You know, he has the ability, so they're going to clearly work on refining his offensive game. But defensively, sounds like he's an incredible point of attack defender, which I have mentioned for years now as one of the Sixers' biggest weaknesses. So regardless of what they do with Ben Simmons this offseason, adding someone with that skill set to this roster is a huge upgrade for them. Petrušev sounds like he's going to be a draft and stash, but you know they've also...
Yeah, so about that.
Yeah.
That apparently is not something he's interested in.
Really?
Mm-hmm. At least from what I'm hearing.
Interesting.
Yes. So I don't know what, maybe he can be convinced, but he spent 2 years at Gonzaga. Then he went to Serbia, played his ass off this past season. I watched him plenty. He is really good. And I don't understand why he made it. Well, I understand why he made it to 50 because the NBA is xenophobic as hell. but no, I mean, he's ready at this point. He's looking at his own age as well and going, you know what, it might be time for me to come over there, because he was really good at Gonzaga too. We'll see what happens there.
Interesting. Well, I mean, just the skill set alone has me intrigued. It sounds like there are some defensive questions with him, but they've needed a stretch five forever, and now they have one in him.
He's also an interchangeable four, to be fair. He's pretty nimble, Brian. He's a guy who can put the ball on the floor. He's a guy who has a very reliable three-point shot. He's a guy who can attack, in straight-line drives, get to the basket. This guy is more offensively multifaceted than I think most teams gave him credit for. And the one thing that stood out to me when watching him in Serbia was he's got NBA moves. You know how sometimes you see guys put up a lot of points in some kind of environment where it's really, it doesn't take them a whole lot. They're either being set up, it's open layups, it's open shots. It's not NBA moves. This dude has an NBA repertoire just in terms of how he creates his points. So 50 was really low for him, honestly.
Nice. Well, I love to hear that. Well, I guess we'll see if he comes over next year. Daryl mentioned him as a likely stash guy, which is the only reason I brought it up. And Rich Hoffman, Athletic.
They may figure something out.
Yeah. But they also get Charles Bassey at 53. And ultimately, the thing I'm most encouraged by is, you know, depth behind Joel Embiid has been such an issue for them. We'll see what happens with Dwight Howard, if they can bring him back next year. But now they at least have some young talent in the pipeline. We'll see, you know, if they get Petrušev on an NBA contract at some point, if they get Bassey, if he's, you know, they dip into their MLE to sign him, or if he's on a two-way, whatever the case may be. They also get Aaron Henry on a two-way, who, you know, a lot of people, as soon as the draft ended, were saying he was one of the best undrafted free agents available. He lasted for about 2 minutes, and then Woj tweeted that he had signed a two-way with the Sixers. I was reading with Hollinger's grades on The Athletic, and as soon as they got to pick number 40, you know, there was a Hollinger would pick after every player, and starting around 40, it was Henry every single time for a while. So it sounds like getting him on a two-way was also great value. I think you said it well. You know, Daryl played the margins as well as he could have, and he said in his presser, you know, we have he said we have three guys on max contracts in their prime. And it was like, oh, two? Interesting. But then he quickly corrected himself to say three. So he mentioned Tobias, Joe, and Ben, and he said, look, with, you know, that's kind of the tricky thing when you have three guys on big deals. It's really hard to build depth around them. So know, hit it. He said this is where the draft is actually really important, and this is why, you know, in Houston, he rarely made first-round picks. He often used them as trade chips to get win-now help. He's saying here, because of the contract status and what the roster build is, he's actually more inclined to use the first-rounders to get guys like Tyrese Maxey last year, Matisse Thybulle 2 years ago, Springer now, where you can lock these guys into very cheap four-year deals. So I thought it was a, you know, not a home run night for Philly, like for Detroit or Orlando or Charlotte, anything like that. No one's going to be writing 3,000-word articles about how the Sixers are the winners of the draft. Honestly, everyone's still focused on the Ben Simmons situation, as well they should be. But I thought this was the type of night they didn't have under the Colangelo regime. And this is what they really, really need. So I thought it was, you know, it will go under the radar, but good night for them. And then the Clippers were my last team, and I thought came out pretty well in this draft. Trading up to 21 to get Keon Johnson. All they gave up, I believe, was a 2024 second-round pick from the Pistons to move up four slots. And then they get Jason Preston and Brandon Boston Jr. in the second round. Traded for both of those picks as well. You know, with Kawhi Leonard, we don't know what's up with him, what his status is for the 21-22 season. He sounds like he's going to miss most, if not all, of the year. So taking some swings on some young guys to, again, build out that supporting cast alongside Kawhi and Paul George, assuming both of those guys stay. I think it's just smart. It's good management from Lawrence Frank and the Clippers front office. And Keon Johnson was a guy who I don't think many people projected to slip to 21. So good on the Clippers for jumping up a couple spots and, again, taking advantage of the Knicks refusing to make draft picks last night.
Yeah, so let's get into that. What was that about?
So I guess that is a good way to seg into the losers, and we'll start with the Knicks. I would not call them the biggest losers of last night by any means, but I know our friend of the podcast, Dan Favalli, he was likewise questioning the Knicks' strategy throughout the draft because, yeah, they traded out of 19, where Charlotte gets Kai Jones, and they, you know, it's a very heavily protected first round pick. Trade out from 21 down to 25, where they take Quentin Grimes. I actually thought they got pretty good value in the second round. Miles McBride at 36 in particular, they traded down from, I think it was 32 to 34 and 36 with OKC. So that was, you know, I think, despite trading down as much as they did, I think they ended up getting some good value here. But it was eyebrow-raising, to say the least. Mm. So, yeah, what do you make of the Knicks, you know, not seeming to love this rookie class as much as pretty much every other team did?
Well, I mean, that's their right if they don't. I just disagree with them.
Yeah.
I think this is a solid rookie class, and I think they should have benefited. I think they just came off a very good year. They have oodles in cap space, of cap space, so why not go for some young upside guys and then complement that with some FA signings to see what you could build on it? But I mean, look, if they didn't love the class, they didn't love the class, and that's their right. I just don't think they thought it through, and I don't think they really did their homework, because there are a lot of guys here that they could have gone with. Jaden Springer, to me, is the obvious one. Hell, Keon Johnson, who got drafted with their pick, he would have been good there. Like, he's a tips guy, no less. Like, this is a superbly athletic wing, like 2-3 wing, who I think could be such a strong asset for Tibbs' defense overall, even by year one to some extent, that I just don't see the logic in doing what they did. But I'm sure they have their reasons. I just hope for New York fans' sake that we're not back to the old Knicks. That would be a shame. But I think they failed to capitalize on a very, very unique opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's fair. If nothing else, you would have liked to see them extract a little more value if yes. they were going to, like, that Charlotte, the protections on that Charlotte pick are so restrictive that, you know, best case scenario in 3 or 4 years, it conveys as number 15. So They traded the 19th pick in what we know is a strong draft for potentially the 15th pick 3 or 4 years from now, and who knows how strong the draft is. Like,
correct.
You know, and it's not like the Knicks have, they have Randall under contract for one more year. They have RJ Barrett. But other than that, they don't have a ton of, okay, these guys are definite keeper. Quickly, I guess, is up there. But, you know, Kevin Knox is under contract for one more year. We have no idea what he is still. Obi Toppin didn't play a ton.
Oh, we know what he is. He's not.
Suffice it to say, I don't think he's going to live up to his pre-draft hype at this point. You know, Mitchell Robinson, we'll see if they pick up the team option. He's only under contract for one more year. So, like, maybe they want to just, they don't want as many young guys. They want to get more veterans in free agency. And as you said, they have $50 million in cap space. But, you know, it's, these are the types of margin moves that, like, I don't know, if you don't have to play these guys just because you take them. Like, you can just have them at the end of your bench as your 14th and 15th man and just use these seasons as development while you bring in the veterans. But I worry that they will prioritize win now guys over, you know, 20-year-olds on 4-year contracts, and it could come back to bite them in a couple of years if they do take the steps that they're hoping to take.
Agreed.
Okay, so let's hit Toronto next, because you mentioned you were unsure of what they did at 4 with Scotty Barnes over Jalen Suggs. Also, it's hard, you know, going back to Sharif Cooper, they had 46 and 47 and did not take him at either spot, which is where I was sure that Sharif Cooper told teams not to pick him.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that after Toronto, we go to Russell Westbrook, because my fingers are
itching to get into that one.
So here's the thing. I'm not anti Scotty Barnes. I want to make that painfully, painfully clear. I think there's a lot of worth in having a super switchable defender who can handle the basketball, who can make plays for others, definitely. But his lack of self-production offensively is a huge negative for me. And you know me, I've gone on this rant several times over the past year or so, because I just do not understand why we somehow think that defense-only guys are worth more than offense-only guys. It's not something that makes sense to me. Why have we put that? We're in a league where offense is key. And, like, we have Şengün who drops to 16 because, well, we have questions about his defense. Yeah, I have questions of whether or not Scotty Barnes can average 10 points. I mean, it's somewhat problematic. And I think it's something we need to address. Like, can he overcome the lack of offensive execution, production, whatever you want to call it, and become that clear-cut number 4 pick? Because you decided as an NBA organization to not pick Jalen Suggs, a guy who is a two-way guy, no less. He plays defense. He's got great defensive upside, but he also has great offensive upside. And you basically are saying, yeah, we don't care about that. We care about the great, great defense. Why? Why would you want to go into a situation where you are, in worst case scenario, playing 4-on-5 offensive basketball? I don't understand that. I don't think that's a top 4 pick. I think that's someone you pick in the mid lottery, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it from both sides for Toronto. If you can map out their offseason, you know, because again, draft is only one snapshot of where they are. We don't know what's going to happen in free agency. It sounds like Kyle Lowry is not coming back. I mean, I think that much has been made.
Yeah, he's probably going to Philly in a Ben Simmons trade if that's happening, or, you know, the New Orleans Pelicans or something like that.
Right, or the Knicks will be involved in the bidding as well. Like, you know, so it Suggs would have made a lot of sense as a potential Kyle Lowry replacement. But maybe they see, you know, Fred VanVleet can take over that role. They have Cary Trent Jr., who is a restricted free agent. Maybe they see, okay, we're set in the backcourt. We've got Fred VanVleet, Cary Trent Jr. We're comfortable with them. Now we have OG Anunoby. We have Pascal Siakam. Let's fill in that last starting spot. We need one more forward. We want to prioritize defense here, because everyone other than Gary Trent Jr., who I wouldn't describe as being an elite defender by any means, other than that, their other three guys are.
He's solid, though. He's good.
But he's not a lockdown. But, adding Scottie Barnes between OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam with Fred VanVleet in the backcourt, that is a ferocious defense.
It really is. And as we know, defenses win championships. Oh, wait a second. We're not in the 1980s anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Bucks, their size and their physicality wore down the Phoenix Suns throughout the finals.
Giannis is averaging 35 in the finals. Come on.
I think they might be one of the few outliers where their defense is so good that it actually could have an it. I agree. Overall, you want to prioritize offense over defense, but I think Toronto's defense may be outlier good if Barnes is good as he's projected to be, and with if they keep these other three guys. The other thing I'll say is there's no guarantee that Scottie Barnes stays with the Raptors.
This is true.
That is something that we have to take into account here, because with the Kyle Lowry situation looming, New York has enough cap space to take him on. The Pelicans now have enough cap space to take him on. But if he wants to go somewhere else and he wants to be involved in a sign-and-trade, the Raptors were being linked a lot in the lead-up to the draft to Ben Simmons. If you're the Sixers and you're signing trading for Kyle Lowry, you're going to want something else if you're giving up Ben Simmons. And the hard cap makes it difficult to add a lot of other contracts into that mix. So if you say we want Lowry and number four for Ben, which couldn't be agreed upon on draft night anyway, you don't want Jalen Suggs because you have Kyle Lowry. You would want Scottie Barnes instead.
I disagree. Because Suggs can also play the two. He's 6'4", known as a combo guard. That's why he's interchangeable with Cole Anthony and Markelle Fultz. You could absolutely put Suggs into Philly, and he would be a tremendous asset in the open court and play the two because of his size and the two-way play. Man, that's really the issue for me. Even if you use Barnes as a trade chip at number four, I just don't think they draft the best trade chip unless they draft it for someone else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Someone else told them, look, we have a deal. Just draft Scottie Barnes on our behalf. Cool. Okay, because then Toronto didn't make that decision.
Right.
But if they, by their own accord, said, let's draft Scottie Barnes and let's use him as a trade chip afterwards, then I think they grotesquely misread the room.
Yeah. That's fair. And I think that was, I brought up Dame and Beal in Washington, Portland, that situation as being one ideally resolve before the draft. I didn't think it was going to happen, but, because now all of these packages that were being offered, if Golden State was offering the 7-14 Wiseman-Wiggins package, before the draft, you have choice of who you would take at those spots. Now it's not a mystery box, or it is still a mystery box a little bit, because you don't know how these guys are going to pan out. But now, if you're entertaining that trade offer from Golden State, now you know it's not 7-14, it's Kuminga, Moody, Wiggins, Wiseman. If you are entertaining a trade offer from Toronto, it is now Scottie Barnes and whatever. So that's a fair point. Would Jalen Suggs, in a vacuum, have had more trade value than Scottie Barnes? Especially for a Wizards team now without a point guard, or a Portland team, if Damian Lillard is being traded, they would also need a young point guard. So that,
or just that's a teams that like offensive creation, Brian.
Yeah, no, it's a fair argument.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it sounds like I'm hating on Scottie Barnes. I don't. I think he was drafted in the wrong slot. I think he was drafted too high. That does not mean that I don't think highly of him. I think he could be the next Andre Iguodala, which is great, which does serve a purpose, but you need to flank those guys with elite offensive talent. There's a reason that Iggy and Dre had to be flanked by Steph and Klay Thompson, because they are two of the best, they might actually be the top two shooters of all time. Like, mm-hmm. I'm ready to put Klay into that second place. I mean, over Ray and over Reggie and those guys. I mean, it's incomparable. When are you ever going to find that level of offense ever again that justifies getting those defense-only guys in and playing the major minutes? Like, again, PJ Tucker in the finals was flanked by Giannis Antetokounmpo, a guy who might go down as a top five player all time. Mm-hmm. It's incomparable. Like, who on the Toronto Raptors right now do you see as having the necessary offensive output, volume, skill set to offset that balance? Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, Gary Trent? Like, that talent isn't there. And I think that also is something you can say about most of the teams around the league.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to save you from yourself because Raptors Twitter is going to come after you like a hive of angry hornets.
Oh, let them. I don't care. So now, Brian, I think we need to, because we have some impatient viewers, I should say, that desperately wants to talk about Russell Westbrook. And you know what? I think it's time.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So it's, yeah, you should maybe just go through the entire trade. But
yes.
Yeah.
So it is.
Oh, God. That's
Russell Westbrook. The Lakers have agreed to acquire Russell Westbrook in exchange for Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and the number 22 pick, which the Wizards then sent to the Indiana Pacers, as we mentioned earlier, for Aaron Holiday and number 31, which they used on Isaiah Todd. The Wizards also sent 2024 and 2028 second round picks to the Lakers to complete the deal. So, Mort, I can only imagine you're bringing this up in the loser section for one reason and one reason only. Fire away, my friend.
All right, so here's the thing. Spacing apparently isn't an issue anymore.
Yeah.
Did they watch the Bucks in the finals and go, well, if Giannis can win by forcing the ball down the throat, so can we. here's where I think it could be problematic. So people like to paint Anthony Davis as a spacer. Mm-hmm. He's not. Like, he's decent. He's not a spacer. He's not a floor spacer. He's not a high-efficiency, high-volume three-point shooter. Like, he's a solid mid-range guy, which does provide spacing, absolutely, but not to the extent of someone who can consistently hit 200 threes per year on 40%. LeBron James has never been a spacer outside his one outlier year in Miami where he shot 40% from downtown on reasonable volume. Outside of that, he's also more of a slasher than he is a shooter. Then Russell Westbrook, and I don't even need to flesh that out. I mean, he's just not a shooter. He's never been a shooter. How does that even work? So you have three guys who are best at operating from around 17 feet in. How is that going to work? Like, they, of course, you could argue, well, Russ and LeBron are probably going to get flanked a whole lot, so they have a continuous shot creator on the floor at all times. Okay, that's cool. Who do they have who can shoot the ball? Like, and I'm not talking about bit players who come in off the bench. Like, okay, let's say they go out and sign, like, Bryn Forbes to the minimum or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure. How many minutes is Bryn Forbes going to play, like, off the bench? Like, 25? That's not going to solve their issue. Who are their two floor spacers that they will need in the starting lineup next to LeBron, Russ, and AD? Andre Drummond? Like, no. Well, who's their two guard then? Who can come out and give you, you go gangbusters from outside? I just, offensively, this horrendous fit. Like, you can argue all day long, well, the talent level. Sure, but its talent level doesn't mesh. I mean, look, if they make this thing work, I will be absolutely flabbergasted, and I will eat every word I've just said. But this seems like a train wreck to me, an absolute train wreck. And I wouldn't even be shocked. 12 months from now, we're sitting here doing another live stream talking about another Russell Westbrook trade.
Yeah,
it's the team a year Westbrook is going to be a thing. He is the new Dwight Howard in that sense.
You know, I have long been a Russell Westbrook, I wouldn't call myself a stan, but I've been a supporter of him.
you have been an occasional defender of Russell Westbrook.
Yes. Because I do think the perception of him at times gets so far skewed, you know, into like, this guy is a totally useless. He's useful. Like Ben Simmons, he is an 82-game player. He is not a 16-game player. And I think between that and what this does to the Lakers' depth, you're totally right to hit on the spacing. Like, let me read you the three-point percentages of Lakers players last year. LeBron James, 36.5%. Anthony Davis, 26.0%. Dennis Schroeder, who was a free agent, 33.5%. Kyle Kuzma, who is no longer there, 36.1%. KCP, who is no longer there, 41.0%. Andre Drummond did not attempt a three-pointer in his 21 games with the Lakers. He's a free agent. Montrezl Harrell did not hit a single three. Alex Caruso on 2.4 attempts per game, 40.1%. Talen Horton-Tucker, 28.2%. They have no one to space the floor. So that is completely... I mean, I don't know why the Lakers are so opposed to giving LeBron floor spacing. It seems like the exact opposite way of how you'd want to build around LeBron James. But that is the path they've chosen. And Russell Westbrook shot 31.5% from three last year. He's a career 30.5% shooter. So, like, it's not a Ben Simmons thing. He'll take the shots. He's just not going to hit a lot of them, and teams are going to openly leave him. Like, they're going to go under every damn screen that Anthony Davis or LeBron James set for Russell Westbrook because they don't care. They are openly inviting Russell Westbrook to take those shots. And what concerns me, beyond just the how does this fit offensively, they are so top-heavy now. You have LeBron, AD, Russ. You just depleted most of your depth. The only other player guaranteed under contract next year is now Marc Gasol, who, if you've seen him in the Olympics, has got dad bod Marc Gasol right now.
Oh, he's done. Gasol is done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have Talen Horton-Tucker and Caruso, who they can re-sign this summer, which I think they will do. But other than that, if they re-sign those guys, they're probably going to go into the luxury tax. So you're going to have the $5.9 million taxpayer mid-level exception, and you're going to have minimum deals, and that's it. And you have to round out your supporting cast. And it's not like, you know, LeBron has missed some time in the last couple seasons. Anthony Davis is just always hurt at some point in the year. Like, you're not building around guys who are the picture of health. Even Russ has started to miss some time in recent years. So being that top-heavy, not having any depth behind them, and with the scheme fit questions, I'm with you. If this works, if Frank Vogel pulls this off and this Lakers team wins a championship next year, makes it to the finals next year, he deserves not only coach of the year next year, but coach of the year for the next 3 years. Because this thing just has so much potential to go south. Like, if you have the assigned probability, it's like there's a 5-10% chance that this works out, and that is being optimistic based on maybe they get the best ring chasers available in free agency. Maybe clutch.
Well, when you say work out, what do you mean? Do you mean championship? Because remember when Daryl said if you have more than a 5% chance, you have to go all in?
Yeah.
No. I don't think they have a 5% chance at the championship.
Nor do I. Oh, I wanted to look, actually. I wanted to check what, how, no. Oh, wow. I think they're championship odds, I think, actually went up. I think they were a plus 600 or so before last night. And right now on FanDuel, they're a plus 420. So kudos to the bookmakers in Vegas for just stealing money from people right now.
Look. This is the thing that the Lakers do. They chase stars, and sometimes it just doesn't matter, like, if it works out.
Yeah.
Because he's going to sell tickets. LA media is going to go, we got Russell Westbrook. We got a former MVP. Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis, LeBron James together all at once. Come to Staples Center. And you know what? They will go. You will have the average Joes of Los Angeles and the California area going, oh, that's exciting. That's great basketball. Stars, yay. And then you know what? They're going to have 75 points on the board in the middle of the fourth quarter because no one can hit a damn three-point shot.
Yeah.
Like, it's You know, it's just I think you could have done better with LeBron, and it only makes me even more puzzled, given that he's already given you a ring in LA.
Yeah,
like that. He wasn't expected to. Like, let's be honest, no one really expected LeBron to come through in LA to win a ring. Yet he did. Why don't you want to build on that success? Like, why don't you want to take a very serious approach to this and go, you know what? It worked. We got him AD. He had like the best teammate ever, and then he had shooters. That worked. We won a damn championship. Let's not muck that up. Let's actually try to double down on the spacing and give both him and AD more freedom instead of believing that Russell Westbrook is the answer. Russell Westbrook is never the answer. Look, the Washington Wizards know that he's not the answer. The Houston Rockets know that he's not the answer. And the Oklahoma City Thunder knows that he's not the answer. How many teams do we have to cycle through to make people and teams realize Russell Westbrook is never the answer?
And what makes this worse is that, well, earlier in yesterday, before the Westbrook stuff started really picking up, I think Mark Stein of the New York Times, or sorry, Mark Stein of Substack, formerly of the New York Times, was the first to report that the Lakers were having in-depth talks with the Kings about Buddy Hield, in which they would have sent Kuzma and Montrez to the Kings. And then Woj...
That would have been better!
Woj tweeted out that it was like, they were making, you know, Montrez picks up his player option, and we're like, oh, okay, that paves the road for one of these trades to go down, and then shortly thereafter, Woj tweets that, okay, yep, we are making progress toward Kuzma Montrez for Buddy Hield, and then Shams out of nowhere, like 10 minutes later, is like, oh no, by the way, they're trading for Russell Westbrook.
So we were talking about winners and losers, by the way.
Yeah, yep. Woj starting to show his age.
I think the up-and-coming Shams Charania is taking over his starting spot now. Shams won last night. Big time.
Yeah, but you know, like Buddy Hield, without depleting all of the depth, without making you give up the number 22 pick or KCP, like if you could trot out KCP, Hield, LeBron, AD, and then fill in point guard, Caruso, isn't that a better team than what they're going to be able to field next year?
Yeah, much better. Much better. So what can they even do here? Can they send out like a signed and trade Dennis Roeder for like they can still do something? Like, so here's my preface. If they somehow still get Buddy Hield,
yes,
via some sort of Dennis Roeder trade, sign and trade, and you know what? I don't even know how that would be finagled, because the Kings also drafted Davion Mitchell. So they now have Mitchell, Fox, and Halliburton. I don't think they're interested in Schroeder, so he might have to get rerouted. It'll have to be a whole thing. But if the Lakers get Buddy Hield in to be the floor spacer, they still wouldn't have enough floor spacing, but they would at least have one elite guy who can feed off of the attention of the three other guys and just feast. And like he would almost have to hit 400 threes in that season.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's a... I was thinking, like, maybe you reroute Kuz and Montrez to Sacramento and you sign and trade Schroeder to Washington if they're interested in that. They shouldn't be, but, you know... Like,
no this one deal, should be interested in Dennis Schroeder. Yeah.
No, but this deal is not final. I mean, it's agreed upon, but it is not finalized. So there's still room to, you know, finagle this framework. And I agree. I mean, I feel like Schroeder... Talen Horton Tucker, I don't think they're going to let go of Caruso, but like you can sign and trade those guys away. They won't be subject to the hard cap unless they get someone back in a sign and trade. So that is their main avenue of improvement now, because otherwise they are so limited financially. They basically have to turn Dennis Schroeder into something really good. And you know, are they able to do that? I agree. If they can get Buddy Hield still, I'll feel better. I'm still not going to go into next season thinking the Lakers are the favorites in the West.
Right. And a comment from our YouTube chat from Scouting Football. That DeRozan to Los Angeles Lakers not happening. And that's true. He was one of the candidates. Like, I would much rather have seen DeRozan end up as that third star than Russ, to be honest with you. Because at the very least, DeRozan has just a smarter approach to the game of basketball. Like he's not shot hunting to the same extent. Mm-hmm. He's not stat hunting. Like I'm not saying that Russ isn't a fantastic passer. He is, but I think he's also seeking those assists. Like he's hunting assists in a manner that sometimes sacrifices the integrity of the offense. Where DeRozan is more calculative, I want to say. Like, he's more reactive as well. Like, he doesn't force passes. He's a low turnover guy. He's just smart. I think he would have been a better fit, but I guess not. I don't know what the Lakers are going to do from here on out. It's just going to be a show, and I'll be sitting there and watching that whole thing. This could implode spectacularly by midseason.
Yeah, I know our friend of the podcast, Anthony Irwin, has just been despondent ever since the news of the trade broke last night. And on the DeRozan note, I think that is one of the places where now it's definitely not going to happen because they would be hard capped if they signed and trade for DeMar DeRozan. So unless he's really willing to take the taxpayer mid-level, which I cannot imagine is the case, I think that dream is dead. I will say Rudy Gay would be an interesting option for them. Especially if they can get him on a minimum deal. Like, they might be able to salvage this by getting ring chasers, but I also don't know. We'll see. I mean, maybe LeBron and Russ and AD have pull with veterans around the league and can convince guys to come to LA and take a minimum deal. But, like, if you're surveying the landscape of the league, right, does the draw of Hollywood, of LA lifestyle, beat out going to Brooklyn, where they have that big three who fit a lot better together, or going to Milwaukee, right, to play, you know, seeing like how much Bobby Portis enjoyed his time there, going to the defending champion. Like, I just don't know that the Lakers are first up for the ring chasers like they were last year.
Right. I think that's reasonable. I think one thing that could change the entire approach of things is making Anthony Davis do something he really doesn't want to do.
Play center.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they have to.
They have to. If you open up for that and you tell ring chasers who are like, you know, 3-4 combo forwards, like Mo Harkless, for example, like Rudy Gay, Mo Harkless, those type of guys, right? You could probably load up pretty well on the wings and like the small big spots, like the old school power forward thing. And if enough of them can hit threes and you can actually have AD at the five, you know, hitting the sporadic three here and there, it might be enough. But yeah, like, that's a non-starter for Davis because I want to play the four. I still believe in traditional positions because I am not aware that things have become more fluid. Like,
there's like, dude, three half the time you play centers.
Center anyway.
Yeah, like, you don't. There are three traditional centers left in the NBA, if that. It's Embiid, Jokic, Karl Anthony Towns. The end.
Right. And when he guards the rim, he's still a center because that is literally transformed into the definition of a center. Like, AD, just come on home. And like, we've been telling LeBron to come on home and take his hair away with the hairline. Like, come on home and just become a center.
Yeah. I mean, Carmelo to the Lakers feels like it's almost guaranteed to happen.
Like, that's a good example, right? Like, that's a dude. But look, he's a power forward now, or what we call a power forward, like, because he can't play center, but he can play the big forward spot. And if AD is insistent, like, let me play that spot and let go find centers, you're starting off at the worst possible way.
Yeah. I mean, there will be, like, if they could get Carmelo, Rudy Gay, Otto Porter Jr. would be an interesting name. If he stays healthy, he you know, is a 40%.
Which he won't, but yes.
Right. But, you know, that's a guy worth taking a swing on. Reggie Bullock, if they can get him in somehow.
Like, Reggie Bullock is looking at signing a non-tax MLE.
Okay. Well, never mind there. Even Nick Batum, keep him in LA, just steal him from the Clippers.
Change Corey locker Craig. Rooms, Nick, right?
Yep. Yeah. Trevor Ariza, George Niang from Utah could be interesting.
See, there you go. Those are the kinds of moves that I would love to see because they could offset that balance.
Right.
But again, it has to start with AD. Like, maybe you just don't tell him. Maybe you just sign these guys and go, well, you know what, AD? Actually, Nicholas Batum is a center. That's his new position. So it doesn't matter. Just roll out with him, okay?
The Nets did it with Bruce Brown, right?
Right. That's how you sell it. Like, remember Bruce Brown? Like, center Bruce Brown in Brooklyn? Look, AD, you don't have to worry. We got you. We got you, Nick Batum.
Talen Horton Tucker, starting center for the Lakers. But, I mean, it is a fair point. We can't judge this. We can't say this is definitely not going to work until we see how free agency goes.
Right.
But they better have something really good lined up in free agency to round out the rest of this roster, because looking at it right now in this snapshot of time, I am nervous as hell about the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yes, it is. It is not necessarily pretty.
No. Okay. Let's speed through other losers of the draft. You brought up the Kings with Davion Mitchell at 9. It seems like the reaction was mixed about that pick. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I thought it was on the move, honestly, when it was made, because I just didn't see the logic in bringing him into the Kings fold with just Fox and Halliburton there. I actually don't think it's bad value at that position. Like, the Davion Mitchell at 9? Like, okay, I could buy myself into that. Would I have preferred he went just a little bit later? Yeah, probably, but it's not something I would lose sleep over. Like, if you like a guy who's just rock solid and you want to take him a little bit earlier, fine by me. But I just don't understand this. Like, what are they doing? Like, starting him and Fox and Halliburton, or letting Davion come off the bench as like a sort of combo defensive guard? But even so, they have so many more pressing issues. I thought for sure that Alperen Şengün would go there at 9 instead, because Rashawn Holmes is an unrestricted free agent. He could leave. They have just this wide hole at center. And if there's one thing we know about Alperen, is that he's a great passer and he's a great post scorer. He's also got, he projects really well as a shooter because his fundamentals are very, very solid. I don't really understand the logic here unless they're trying to flip it, which they still can, I guess. But if they're banging on keeping this one, like, what are their end game? What is their end game? I don't know. And also, more importantly, Brian, and we need to know this, did Monty McNair and Vivek Ranadive call him up right after selecting him and collecting the entire office and going, 1, 2, 3, Davion Brooks? Because if so, please let that video come out. We need it.
Yeah. They're clearly gearing up to trade De'Aaron Fox or Ben Simmons. That's the best I got here. No, I'm with you. I don't. This is another one where it's like I have to see the full. You know, do they trade Buddy Hield and Bagley for something to make this make more sense? Because right now it does feel like they are just. They were already rich in the backcourt. They got richer, but you know. Did they need to? It sounds like they are pretty high on Franz Wagner. You know, I saw a lot of people saying number 9 was his floor, so maybe Orlando kind of just scooped it up at 8 and made them pivot, and like they kind of had to panic because they thought he was going to be there. I don't know. It feels like a weird pick, but like I like him as a player. It's just the team fit that gives me concern.
And again, this is the summer where I want to see the Kings pivot into just being smarter. I feel I say that every single summer, but I want to see them now make use of this. I want to see them make smart moves. I can't help but think that whenever they do something dumb, that it's just directed from overhead. That is a Vivek Ranadive decision and not a Monty McNair decision. I don't think this is a Monty McNair pick. I don't think he goes into this going, hey, we got Tyrese Halliburton last year, who was a Rookie of the Year candidate. We have De'Aaron Fox, who is an all-star level player. So let's add a third point guard to the mix, or a third combo. And I'd even bring up Buddy Hield, who has yet to be traded. Like,
right.
I don't think McNair is someone who would look at that and go, let's just get all of these guys together. And I'm not saying draft for need, but this is ridiculous. Like, then you could have traded down, you could have flipped something, you could have done things. I mean, and you didn't. So that to me just screams that Vivek Ranadive came in with a mandate because he'd seen 5 minutes of YouTube highlights of Davion Mitchell and just went, I want this guy and only this guy. Get him if France was not on the table.
I have to ask about Memphis as well. Because at least, you know, Davion Mitchell was like, he was projected in that range at least. So like, fit-wise, there are questions, but talent-wise, not as much. Memphis trades up to number 10. On Monday, this is the deal that goes down. So they trade Jonas Valanciunas, 17 and 51, to the New Orleans Pelicans for Eric Bledsoe, Steven Adams, 10, 40, and a top 10 protected Lakers first that may be more relevant than we expected. Then they go Zaire Williams at 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, even go down further down the board, you know, they trade up for number 30. They give up 2 second-round picks and move up 10 spots for Santi Aldama. They take the 30 pick from the Jazz. So what did you think of the Grizzlies last night? Because they've been, you know, Draft Twitter has loved them for the last couple of years in particular. It seems like they just could not make a mistake here. This feels like the first day where, you know, at least in terms of maximizing value, I don't know that they did the best they could have here.
I want to read you some numbers because, but before I do, so I want to say just 5 or 6 years ago, it was very uncommon for high-rated lottery picks coming out of college to shoot inefficiently from the floor. We very rarely saw lottery picks come in with low true shooting percentage, low efficiency, low field goal percentages. Like, nowadays we're seeing it a ton because guys are taking more threes and all that. But so, Zaire Williams here. He scored 214 points last year at Stanford, and it took him 203 shots to do it.
Oh boy!
Despite the fact that he took 4 threes per game.
Ooh.
Which he hit at 29%. I think at best you're looking at a Cameron Johnson upside situation, which, okay, that's not bad. That's fairly valuable. At 10, though? I don't know. I'm not crazy about this pick whatsoever. I think he could have a good future. I think he could be one of those switchable forwards and all that, but that efficiency is low, and if he comes in that raw and he can't hit jump shots and he's not a guy who can really finish around the basket, if he just can't convert, what are you drafting him for at 10? And are you absolutely sure that you could have gotten him later in the draft?
Yes.
You traded up for this pick, and this is what you're left with? Really? I don't see it.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to pretend that I know enough about really, like, any of the prospects outside of the top few to say, this guy's going to bust, or this guy was, you know.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe Williams and maybe Aldama pan out well. I'm just going by, you know, kind of what the consensus ranks were and mock drafts and big boards, all that stuff. Like, I'm looking at ESPN. Zaire Williams was their 28th ranked prospect. Yeah. So to get him at 10... You know, are you sure he wasn't going to be there at 17 if you just stayed put? And if so, like, maybe you heard something. Maybe, you know, Washington at 15 or OKC at 16 was going to take him. Could you not have just jumped up to 13 or 14 and not have given up as much as you did, or not taken back both Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe? And then, you know, for Aldama at 30, like, did you have to give up 2 second-round picks to move up to that spot, or was he going to be there at number 40 as well? Like,
right.
You know, I hope these guys pan out, because, and I don't want to doubt Memphis because their evaluations have been really spot on over the last few years. But just in terms of pure maximizing draft spot value, that's where I have questions about their strategy last night.
Yep. Totally agree.
And then the Spurs were my last. Speaking of not maximizing draft spot value, I feel like that was the number one surprise of the draft. Josh Primo at 12 to the Spurs. Again, a guy widely mocked, late first, early second range. And, you know, much like we're talking about Sacramento with the questions there about fit, you know, San Antonio already has DeJounte Murray, Derek White, Lonnie Walker. Now you're adding Josh Primo to the mix. What's going on here?
I wish I could tell you. I don't understand what they were doing. I don't think Josh Primo was in any... I don't think he was in any situation where numerous teams looked at him, and if so, maybe you could have swung a deal. He didn't seem overly attractive, but hey, look, NBA teams work differently. All it takes is one team to be interested, and if the Spurs knew that this was a guy that was going to be off the board a couple picks later so they couldn't trade down or whatever, okay. But you have to love this kid to do this. Like, you have to be absolutely head over heels in love with his upside. And he is super young. There is something there. I'm not saying there isn't, but look, again, I'm going to bring him up once more, but why not Alperen at 12?
Yeah.
Why not? And like, I've seen Spurs fans argue, well, because we have Jakob Poeltl. Right. Okay. So you, because you have one guy up front, one guy up front, you can't.
You also have DeJounte Murray and Derek White. Like, the argument would apply in the backcourt as well.
Also that. I don't see the logic here. I think you could have gone in a lot of different directions that could have been equally, if not more interesting and have more upside.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. Hope I am. The Spurs usually make fools out of us all at one point in time. So maybe this is it. But yeah, I was definitely shocked to see this one. I thought Alperen would go no later than 12. And I think he would have fit them like a glove, just in terms of how they develop guys, what they like from guys, but guess not.
Yeah, this is another one where it's really, I'm not going to question the prospect himself. I hope he pans out.
Yes.
But again, could you not have traded down to 19, where the Knicks were openly trying to get out of both of those picks, or traded one of, you know, OKC down to 16, down to 18 to take one of OKC's picks instead, down to 17 for New Orleans pick? Like, were you so much higher on Josh Primo than everyone else left on the board that you said, you know, if we trade down and this kid's not there, we're going to be disappointed? And if that's the case, like, you know, maybe their evaluations found something that, you know, the scouting community did not, but it felt like a reach. And given the, you know, positional overlap with the guys already on that roster, it just doesn't feel like the Spurs are any closer now to, you know, getting back to rally. If anything, they feel like they're taking even a further step back with all of these veterans expiring this offseason. You know, DeMar, Rudy Gay, Patty Mills. Now you're bringing in a super young, pretty raw guy who's going to be behind Murray, White, Walker in the rotation. Like, the Spurs are suddenly looking like they have plenty of cap space, so maybe they add reinforcements and they're not as bad as they currently look like they will be. But right now, given the talent on this roster, no, it's looking like we might, maybe they're trying to get their next Tim Duncan. Maybe that's the play. All right, well, I think that's a good place for us to wrap up. Thank you all, as always, for listening in today, and for those who joined us on YouTube, thank you for doing that as well. You can find us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek. I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. And we will have a free agency preview for you guys up in the next couple days as well. Because, oh, by the way, free agency starts Monday. There is no rest in this NBA offseason yet.
Right. And also for those watching on YouTube, yeah, I know you won't necessarily be a part of it, but we might on this channel do a live stream of the opening hours of free agency. Maybe. It hasn't been written in stone yet, but we're discussing it. So stay tuned.
All right. Later, Mort.
Later, Brian.